Hey everyone, it's Dario Kristen with AfterBuzz TV. Did you know that TrueCar.com is changing car buying experiences forever? Yes, everyday TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Although, some features are not available in all states. But it's okay. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off of MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these easy steps. It's just three of them. First, you go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people pay for the car you're looking for. Then register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is so simple. Just print out your true savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience overall. Remember, everyday TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save your money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Masters of Sex After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Masters of Sex After Show.
All right. Tonight we have an exciting, super exciting episode because we have two male perspectives in the house. One you might remember, you cannot forget, Lem.
What's up, everybody? It's so good to be back.
So happy to have Lem back. He is amazing and an Aquarius, if anyone would like to know. And then we've got wonderful Roya.
Hello, everybody. I'm so glad Lem is here because I can't stand this guy to my right.
What's your sign, Roya?
Yeah,
what's
Roya, we have to get your sign.
I'm a Leo.
Ooh. Oh, of course. Rar. I have no idea what these things mean.
And then we've got just Bobby.
Just a Gemini. Cool. Hey, great intro, by the way, Jen. I really appreciate that. Yeah, it's going to be a great show, guys.
All right, let's get right into it. So it's Masters of Sex, Season 2, Episode 6, Blackbird. Mm. I'm not understanding where Blackbird. I think we've come to a blank on the last two episode titles. So if anybody has any insight, let us know. Masters of Sex started out super sexy with sex the beginning of this episode. It was Masters and Virginia having sex, and it seemed like it was hot sex. And all he said, he was looking at her. He had the eye contact. The eye contact is so important during sex. And he said, I could kiss you right now. But he didn't.
She says, no.
We don't kiss.
They don't kiss.
It was kind of a Julia Roberts moment in Pretty Woman. Did you guys pick that up? A little bit.
I got that. Yeah, I can see that, definitely, for sure.
When I think we don't kiss, I think Pretty Woman. So anyways, that's what I thought.
That's what you go to?
That's what I went
every
to.
Time. Okay.
But it was really quick, and so it was interesting to see that. And then it goes right into, so it just barely flashed with that. And then it goes right into Dr. DePaul, which seemed to be a huge focus of this episode. And she was, getting scanned, getting radiation at the appointment. And it's so weird. I mean, I thought it was such a weird scene because the doctor was so, like, cold to her.
Yeah.
She was like, I was raised by vampires. Mm-hmm. Nothing. He didn't even smirk.
Well, I don't think that that's necessarily weird. And I actually think Dr. DePaul expected that, and she was sort of playing with him because of the situation. Because when you think about the medical community, maybe we've talked about this on the show, you have to be cold. Not cold, but you have to be distant. Because when you get emotionally involved with a patient, that's when the medical side of it starts to get complicated. And so as a doctor, as a nurse, whatever, you want to remove yourself.
Yeah,
emotionally.
You can't be falling apart every day.
Exactly. You would kill yourself every day with seeing the stuff he sees. So I understand him being cold, and I think her reaction to him wasn't much shock as it was her just kind of trying to play his buttons and saying, you know what, this is hopeless. I know this is hopeless. You're not going to give it to me straight, although he did later. Mm-hmm. Let me just have a little fun with you and see how far I can take
it. But do you also think that it's the juxtaposition between her being that way herself and
Absolutely.
Then maybe not realizing that that's how she is with her patients? Because she is, I mean, up until the point Virginia came into her life, she was that way, you know, as a person, whether she was, you know, in doctor mode or outside of doctor mode. She was a very cold kind kind of just, you know, stale person. And so I think maybe it was her seeing what she's been to other people and kind of like, oh, okay, this is how I've been.
Yeah.
No, I didn't think she was being self-perceptive.
No?
No. I don't think she realized that's how she's been.
I think she's so self-perceptive, it literally, spoiler alert, killed her in some ways. I know we can talk about the cancer, but I think she's so inwardly focused about mm-hmm. everything. We talk about mm-hmm. that scene. I know I'm jumping ahead, but the scene where she's talking about never being in love or nobody ever loved her, mm-hmm. she's really self-aware, maybe too self-aware. So I think mm-hmm. that's part of exactly what's going on.
I agree
on.
With Bobby.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is this going to be like how the show goes?
Guys versus girls, Bobby. The guys like, will geez. Always win.
I'm just saying, ugh. You know.
Spicy's you never know, coming back. It's Lemini.
It's Aquarius. It's a Gemini thing. It's an air sign thing.
Oh, gosh. Air sign. Here we go.
Okay. Anyways. So then we go right into Virginia is talking to people at Buell's Hospital trying to get them to participate in the study. When she finds out, she gets somebody that is very interested in doing the study. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I would love to, but everybody, you know, Dr. Hendricks has forbidden everyone to do this study. I wasn't expecting that.
Weren't you expecting it?
Well, I know that he was taking it down, but I didn't think that he would so openly forbid it, so he would be confronted later. He would obviously get confronted on that later.
So when he was taking down the posters, what did you think that was the reasoning for? What was the reason
well, no,
for
no, no, no. I thought he was definitely doing that, but I thought he was like kind of behind their back. Like, you could do your study, whatever, mm-hmm. but behind your back, I'm going to take down the flyers. But then forbidding the whole hospital.
I was under the impression that it was two different sides of the same coin for Hendricks, and taking down the posters was more for patients. If you're a patient walking through that hospital,
yeah.
which is a way that Masters had been recruiting people, mm-hmm. that if you don't see the flyers, you don't know there's a sex study. You
yeah.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the staff was a separate issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe that's wrong, but I thought the posters were for the patients. Hendricks wanted to keep a respectable hospital, and we don't want to, you know, engage in a circus act, whatever.
Right.
And then the staff is – he called the staff together and said – absolutely not. Here's a line of demarcation. No.
Right. And then Dr. Masters quickly confronted him, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Dr. Masters has, like, confronted – he confronts someone. Can we, like, take shots every time Dr. Masters confronts somebody and gets in a fight?
So
or, like,
drunk?
Hit somebody?
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like can we start drinking?
Drunk?
Like, can we make this a drinking game?
I would rather do the Dr. Masters, let's confront people, than the Libby Masters, let's be passive aggressive.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. So. I love it.
Except for
I
Libby Masters
it.
Would make me want to drink. So I think Libby Masters would be a more – fun drinking game with the passive aggressive. Well, it happens a lot too.
I think when he confronted him, I think what he explained himself, and I could kind of understand where he's coming from, because he basically turned it into a civil rights issue. And what he basically was saying is, you know, the African American community in the past, up leading up to this point, has been subjected to severe testing and things of mm-hmm. this nature. And he didn't want, to me,
that was totally valid.
Right. And he didn't want Dr. Masters to exploit that, even mm-hmm. though this is something brand new, something that has been done, but he didn't want it to turn into that. So I can understand his point of view.
Yeah, when Dr. Hendricks explained all that, mm-hmm. it made a lot more sense, and I liked his character a lot better, knowing mm-hmm. that he was trying to protect his staff versus just taking it down because of a selfish reasoning.
Right.
And it was to protect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. It was right. good. Made me happy.
I thought immediately of the Tuskegee study on syphilis, mm-hmm. which was one of the most famous, egregious cases of
oh, yeah.
of African-American.
600.
Yeah.
It's 600 black
ridiculous.
Men. Yeah.
And that was going on a couple decades before this, and I don't know if it had been publicly out at this time as much mm-hmm. as it was later on and then obviously now.
Right.
But there's a lot of cases of this, so Hendricks doing that, to me, is how do you say no to that reason? You know,
right.
how do you argue with that when you're Masters?
Right.
Yeah, Masters has good intentions with the sex study in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. And yeah, he's very progressive for a scientist and a doctor at that point. But I think Hendricks played the trump card on him right there.
Oh,
so what are you supposed
sure.
to do?
Oh, definitely.
What are you supposed to do?
Definitely. No, definitely.
No, I love it. And then Dr. Masters goes home and discusses what Hendricks said with Libby. And she was preoccupied being a total peeping Tom, watching Coral. And so I didn't mention this because I thought when I was writing notes, I had missed it. But I never heard, I didn't really understand how, I thought the whole time that Robert was actually like her uncle. Like, I didn't think it was a romantic thing. And so when she was watching him, I was trying to watch it to see if it was romantic, you mm-hmm. know? And it did seem romantic the way, you know.
Really, you didn't, because they even, Coral and Libby have a conversation about being in the bedroom and having sex mm-hmm. with her boyfriend, Robert.
Oh, well, yeah. Then she, like, totally puts it together. Yeah, she totally made it out to scene. Like, she went with it. I mean, she was definitely going with it, but I totally thought she was doing that to take a stab at Libby.
Well, I think it's because Libby crossed the line of already assuming your boyfriend
right.
and then trying to tell her how to live her life.
Right. Yeah.
That Coral took it in her own hands, be like, all right, mm-hmm. if that's how you feel, I'm going to play with this and go my own route.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And shove it in your face.
Right.
And it does it very well.
You know, she did. And I think it was a great way for her to do that without seeming like she was doing that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, of course, how Libby's been with her, you know, this whole time and just very passive-aggressive or even just aggressive, period. Like, just really the whole, I mean, even the shampoo incident was just really horrific and mm-hmm. very over the top. And I think it was just a way for her to get back at her, you know, when she was assuming that Robert was her boyfriend, when she said, and she all she said was, we live together. Mm-hmm. And then she just, you know, took that.
Right.
So it was interesting, you know, not to jump ahead, but then, you know, finally finding out that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, mud in your face or whatever that expression is that, you know, you're thinking one thing, but it's not because you're so over the top with being, you know, prejudiced mm-hmm. to her
yeah.
and her family.
Do you guys think that at this point in the story, if Libby had found out that that was Coral's boyfriend, or I'm sorry, brother, not boyfriend, do you think Libby would have reacted differently or do you think it would have gone down the same route?
No, I think it would have been way different because Coral's using those stories and like making up that those stories, I think, to purposely get to Libby, and it did exactly what Coral wanted it to.
I agree.
Made her crazy.
100% with you. Coral received her severance for no other reason at the end of the day than she flat out lied to Libby about the sex mm-hmm. and about what Robert was. Mm-hmm. And either lied by omission or hinted at lying with the breath in the bed and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, which mm-hmm. you would never do with your brother, hopefully. And I think that at the end of the day is Libby's trust was betrayed. As many other problems as Libby has, as many other problems Libby tried to find in Coral, mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest problem. And I disagree with Libby a lot about this, but there's a small part of me that kind of agrees with her that Coral did overstep the line, and you shouldn't have lied about that, because it was definitely not only a dig at Libby, but why are you lying about something like that to
her? But don't you think she had, I don't want to say the right to, but I mean, you could understand why she would do such
for
a
sure.
thing.
For sure. And I let me put it this way.
I still think it's a reason to terminate, though.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. I'm like 90% of the way with Coral, and I'm kind of sad if she does get terminated, we're not going to see her anymore or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's like 10% of me that says, you know what, Libby does have the kid. That is another kind of a trump card. Maybe there is a right there for her to say, you lied flat out to me. Mm-hmm. You let me think this lie by omission. Beyond that, I can't trust you anymore with my kid. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah. No, I totally get it.
I'm just surprised Coral was there that long. I mean, I don't see why she would have quit, you know, after being subject to all of that and still doing it. I mean, I understand she needs the job or whatever, but it seemed like she just kept getting so much from Libby, you know. And I think, for me, I don't know if you guys agree, but I think Libby, and the reason why she was looking at them all the time, I think she was just jealous of what she thought was their relationship. Mm-hmm. Because her and Masters obviously have them separate little nasty twin beds, and, you know, they're not
nasty little twin beds.
I'm just I mean, it's just ridiculous. No, it's not. I mean, it's ridiculous. That's what I should have said.
Definitely.
Ridiculous, especially next to you. Okay, so ridiculous twin beds that they had. It was stupid. And so I think, you know, Coral was taking jabs at her to do that, but she was just jealous.
Yeah.
She was jealous of what she thought their relationship was.
And I think it explained a lot of why Coral stayed in the situation she was in, because if any of you guys maybe back then were in that situation, you'd quit, try and find another nanny job. Mm-hmm. But because she knew she was lying the entire time, maybe that's why Coral stayed with it, because it was all a lie.
Oh, she had to keep it going.
Yeah. Well, not to keep it going, but because she felt like she had an upper hand
with
the lie.
Let's talk about that. We can't speculate too much, obviously, right. But we all, maybe I'm wrong for you, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I look at Coral as pretty wholesome, very hardworking, a very mm-hmm. likable character. Maybe Coral is a bit evil. Maybe Coral's a bit of a liar.
No, Libby is a bit evil.
Absolutely.
And
but
she
maybe,
has provoked her.
Maybe Coral
She's provoked
herself,
her.
Coral lived a lie for a while here. Maybe Coral's got some ulterior motives and some problems on her own that we can never maybe explore now because she's been terminated. But maybe Coral wasn't the nicest person.
No, she was so nice and so sweet. And then when Libby would do the speech correction stuff and the nobody really cares about your life. No, screw Libby on that.
I mean, I think that she was, it was just a form of defense. Because even when she said, he can't pick you up anymore because he has a record or whatever, which again, it was ridiculous. But the fact that she did all that information. But so she says, okay, my aunt is picking me up. And then she follows her and find out that she just parked around the corner. But she wanted to keep her job. So you don't know her situation. She needs that job. She has to keep that job. So she's doing whatever she can to do it. Yeah. Obviously, lying is not the best method. But at the same token, what was she going to do?
Mm-hmm. I see it.
I'm Team Coral. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I am too. I love her. I hope she's
I'm
not
team
gone.
I'm Team Coral, but I'm also Team I Understand Why She Got Fired.
This is 2 weeks ago, Doug Greathouse leaves. If this week... Listen.
I don't hate her for doing what she did. I mean, I also...
You're just saying she deserved to be fired.
Like, I would terminate, too.
After Doug Greathouse leaving 2 weeks ago or whatever, if Coral leaves after this week... No, I can't. It's two people I like that are gone. You might have to take over for me permanently. I don't want to do it anymore. If Coral and Doug Greathouse are gone, what am I supposed to do?
We've still got Masters in Virginia having sex.
And Lillian's dead. Who do I have left? I got nobody left.
You're not Team Virginia?
I don't mind her, but like I was totally Team Doug Greathouse for the sheer entertainment value.
Really?
You know?
And now he's gone.
And now he's gone. Just
Lem, can you guys switch sides, please? Can't stand sitting next to him. Yeah.
Really?
I miss you on this side. Come back.
He's been back for 15 minutes and you're already ready to take him back? Really?
All right, you guys. Enough. I've got to break up this. I've got to police this. Back to the show. Anyways, and so then we skip over to Betty and Jean, okay? Mm-hmm. And they... are, you know, Betty's planning a party for his pretzels are getting syndicated. I don't know what that means. His pretzel commercials?
Syncopated.
That's what it is. Syncopated. The first term.
Yeah. Yeah. Hilarious. And so she's planning that party. And then we see, like, another shot of Betty, and she is with Helen. We see Betty in bed with Helen, and after she's just gone through this whole thing with Gene where he's like, you know what, if you're mine and I'm yours, I can get past all this mm-hmm. stuff, I don't have to adopt, blah, 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 blah. You know, then like two scenes later, we see someone under the sheets, which I definitely knew it wasn't Gene.
There would be, small little
yeah, it was, I was about to say, right, right. We would seem, okay, all right. And so I was kind of, you know, surprised to see her back in bed with Helen because they were so... catty, and I don't really see the love link between them, you know. But she did say the flesh is weak, and gosh, I understand that. The flesh is weak. This was filled with a lot of sexy.
You sound
little...
like you're testifying.
Yeah, I was like, is this, is this how you feel?
No, I'm just saying that resonated with me. The flesh is weak.
Like, seriously, you said it like eight times.
Okay. I'm just saying. All right. Anyways. Jesus. Okay, so what did you guys think about Helen and Benny?
First off, maybe we talked about and a little the bit flesh last being week. Weak. I was very skeptical of Sarah Silverman. I was like, okay, let's see what happens here. I know that Helen's a relatively easy character for her to play because it's quirky, funny, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think she's doing a great job, though.
Yeah,
I love her.
Yeah, she's playing like bad, you know, trouble girlfriend.
Yeah, I think she's doing great. I think she fits right in. And I don't think about her. The first scene I saw, I was like, oh my God, it's Sarah Silverman. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. Now I don't think about that anymore, which I think is a sign that she's kind of fit in. So mm-hmm. good for her.
Right.
It breaks my heart seeing them together because their love can't be.
I know, but is it really love? I think it was just something kind of comfortable that they called love, but it's not really love because if you really loved someone, you would want them to be happy and you would want them to go off and do what they need to do. There is no white picket fence for them together, so they really need to do what they need to do. And Betty was trying to make it work and Helen was like not rejecting it, which I totally understand on Helen's. I would reject it too, but you know.
What was the reason why they split up in the first place? I know they touched on it.
So she could marry Jean.
They didn't have a future. Well, what they talked about last week a little bit, they didn't have a future. Yeah. The no white picket fence thing. Mm-hmm. Money was an issue for them, which is interesting because both Betty and Helen are very superficial and very sexual. And there's nothing wrong with those two things, but neither of them equals true love, which I think is kind of your point.
Well, so, I think you can be in love, but you just can't work together.
Yeah.
Like I think they truly love each other, but they're just not meant to be together. And I think them together as being toxic. And I think that's what it comes down to. And so they're trying to live separate lives, but it's just not, you know, they still keep getting gravitated to each other.
And remember what Betty said last week. She said something to the effect of, she said to Helen something
Number
the effect
12.
Of, I went through hell to get rid of you, like, don't bring me back in or whatever.
I know.
She said,
it
seems that
like
idea.
There was, like, trouble. Yeah. Like, she was the bad girlfriend.
No, I think it's just a toxic situation.
I disagree. I think they love each other so much. Like,
no, Helen, I didn't even really see them really loving each other. Honestly, I think it was just about like their oral
on,
sex.
Right where it was.
No, it's cool. No, I'm just going to keep repeating what I just said. They love each other and keep scribbling.
They love each other. Yeah.
She's writing it over and over again, like Bart Simpson on the chalkboard.
They love each other.
Right. Well, a couple scenes later, we see that Helen actually proposes to Al. Mm-hmm. You know, and they start kissing. Betty gets upset and walks out.
See, that's jealousy right there. Jean's, come on, how is that not proof that she's in love unless she's being jealous that someone else is touching her woman?
I think
like, it's my toy, don't touch my toy.
You're right, you have a point. I agree. I just think Gene's progression is so funny on this. First he thinks, oh, they're good friends, this is great, Helen's around, this is awesome. Right. Then he kind of is a little put off by them and knows they're serious and whatever. Then he thinks Helen and Betty hate each other, then he thinks Betty's in love with Al, and then he finally gets it. Right. The progression is so funny.
Well, he's kind of like, I mean, you know, just even going back to when they first got together, he's just kind of that kind of guy that just is, everything is oblivious to him.
Yeah.
He just wants what he wants and he wants to think, you know, and he's allowed. And that's why she's been able to do it. The whole manipulation of her going to the doctor and the fertility and all that stuff. He believed it because she told him. She didn't until he went, you know, and found out by, you know, paying for what he thought was treatment and it wasn't, is how he found out. So, I mean, I think that's his bad. That's his fault, in my opinion.
What? Love is blind. He's really in love with Betty.
Yeah, he is.
He wants his happy ending.
Thanks,
but.
Roya.
Exactly. No, and
you're welcome.
But I do agree with Roya. I think that Betty and Helen do love each other, but I'm just going back to I think that they just can't be together, which is why it didn't work in the first place.
Yeah.
That's what breaks my heart, is that they can't be together because of society. They can't. Mm-hmm. So,
but I don't think it's just society that they can't be together. There's something else toxic between the two of them.
Yeah. Don't you see the bad juju between
They're
them?
They're too much alike.
There's a lot of bad juju.
There's so much juju.
I don't see. Maybe love is blind and that's why I'm not seeing it.
Oh. Juju ain't blind.
All right. So meanwhile, back at Buell's. Am I saying it right? Buell's?
Buell.
Masters and Jenny meet with the Chronicle. Right? So this woman has come in, and she's come in a couple times to meet with them, and she's talking about publishing their story in their newspaper. And so we see in a few different scenes that she, you know, comes off as, you know, it sounds like it's supportive, and then she meets with Masters again, and she's taking notes on everything he's saying, and she's trying to put him in a place where it doesn't really favor him, but she's still trying to kind of BS him through it, you know, and say, oh, then no, this is going to look good for you. You just have to look like someone that's going through adversity, but still pushing forward and, you know, being progressive.
Mm-hmm.
No thoughts on that? That lady?
I thought she was smart for what she was doing.
The old bait and switch?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I think she was using it as a way.
I think she was going to destroy him
in
the article.
Well, yeah,
And do we think that the article is actually going to get published?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, yeah. Well, based on that conversation here with the editor? Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I think she was using it as a way, kind of the same way that Dr. Hendricks was doing with not having the study. And I think she was taking it as an African-American woman that has a chance to write a story about someone that she normally wouldn't be able to write about, and kind of using that as a catalyst and being like, okay, I want to expose this, but I also want to show what you really are like.
Mm-hmm.
Not that she was going to say anything that was wrong, but she definitely wanted to expose him for what he was, and that's why she kept bringing up, oh, yeah, you were fired. Oh, yeah, you threw a chair through the window, all these kind of things, just letting him know that this is what you are. So
yeah, but
I'm
those are not all the, that's not the study, though. You know, those details don't need to be, like, if they're using facts, they should be using facts about the study and keep it centric on that, not, you know, all the fights and all the background the scenes. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not saying that that's what she should be doing. I'm saying that's why she's doing it.
Right. Yeah. So.
How about, real quick, the three strong black characters, Morgan, the reporter, Wilson, I believe is his name, the editor, and then Dr. Hendricks, where you have people like Greathouse who are kind of weaselly. You've got Barton who's got plenty of his own problems, and Masters can kind of manipulate them and has at times. Masters hasn't been able to manipulate Morgan, Hendricks,
nobody,
or Wilson. And it's interesting that in this time period...
He's like the worst bully ever.
And not only that, but it's interesting in this time period, I'm not saying the three of them are beyond reproach, because we don't really know. Hendricks has done some shady stuff, like taking down the study,
really shady, though?
Well, I think it is a little shady,
it was shady.
Absolutely.
It was shady because he wasn't completely privy to what that was.
And he's not beyond reproach, but those are three very strong characters, all black in this time period, in a situation where you would expect them to be maybe a little more deferential, or people would try to take advantage of them. And they're kind of the ones who are saying, this is the way that it is. I'm the driving force in this relationship, and this is how it's going to be. And Masters lost all three of those battles thus far.
Man, he sure
it's interesting.
Did.
So do you think that the race factor, giving that, like, why do you think that that is, you know, since you brought it up? Like, why do you think that he hasn't been able to manipulate them like he has with his other colleagues?
Because everyone sees what a kind of puny guy he is underneath his little white coat.
I think there's probably 100 reasons. The first maybe is, I don't know, Buell Green is an incredibly professional hospital, just like Good Samaritan, just like everywhere he's been before. Mm-hmm. And I know Masters probably thought, okay, this is going to be a professional hospital, but this is a slap in the face to him to say, this is a tight ship we run here. Mm-hmm. The newspaper, the St. Louis Chronicle, is just as professional as, you know, the white newspaper or whatever. Right. And I think it's a commentary on society, among many other things, that, you know, the black side and the white side were separate but equal at the time, which was not the right way to go, but the mm-hmm. key is equal. The black paper was just as strong with just mm-hmm. as many strong characters. Mm-hmm. The black hospital was just as strong with just as many strong characters. And Masters is the representation, to a little certain extent, of kind of the white segment of society running into that and saying, oh, you're just as smart as us, you're mm-hmm. just as good as us, you're just as strong as us, huh, okay, I gotta figure that out, you know. And then there's other things going on, maybe personal relationship wise right. but I think it's a little commentary on society at that point that says, separate but equal, separate mm-hmm. was wrong, mm-hmm. equal was right, these people were just as intelligent.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's a great point you bring out. It is the 50s, and I think too, I think when Masters went over to that hospital, I think he went over there thinking, like, this is his last opportunity, they're going to accept me because these other all-white hospitals are not,
yeah.
so let me go over to the black hospital, thinking that I'm just going to go here and I'm just do whatever I want to do, I need my own study room, I need this. He was making all these demands, and they allowed him to a certain degree, and then it got to the point, like, you're done. You know, we're not going to allow you to bully us. And like you said, when he ran into those three characters, and I think a lot of it comes back to what Dr. Hinges was saying earlier about the study itself, why he didn't want to use black subjects because of, again, the history. And he's like, no, you're not going to come into our territory and try to run things. This is how we do things. If you don't like it, then there's the door, because we don't need you to succeed.
Yeah.
Right. And do you think there was any fact to his what he had threatened the editor later on in the episode, where he said that, you know, the penis size elevated testosterone.
Totally sexual. Lying.
Oh, he was lying.
Yeah, totally that lying. Was total lies.
Yeah. yeah. Right. He was just okay. He was just trying to
defend himself.
Yeah, defend himself.
And okay. I think scare them into not publishing the mm-hmm. article.
Right.
Which didn't work, obviously.
Right, exactly.
So. Gosh, nothing is working for him. I feel so bad. I feel like Dr. Master's going to have a heart attack. No more sex.
But do you think, Jenna,
no more sex, buddy.
He deserves what he's getting? That's my question to you. No?
Not all of it. Do you think just he deserves some? All of it?
I didn't say that. I'm
what
asking
do you think?
You.
No, I don't think he deserves it. I think he's misunderstood.
So misunderstood.
In a weird way, I kind of agree with you.
I yeah. do. I feel like he has to kind of, like, I feel like he's like this big bird that just kind of puffs out his chest because he has to, because... I don't know, because he's just a tiny bird inside. I don't know. Like, he
he's
just
a
has
big
to...
bird with a tiny bird inside.
He's like a peacock. Where they ruffle all
yeah, he's like
out
a tiny
whatever.
Bird, and he's just
in
trying to like
body.
Puff himself out there and try to be strong and macho, but it's not right. really working out for
it's
him, and everything's
chest.
Falling apart.
Put his bird chest out there.
If you guys are keeping score at home, we just went from a discussion on race in the 1950s to the tiny bird, big bird metaphor.
Right.
That's what we do here on Masters of Sex.
There's nothing inside where it's like, I think that he comes across the wrong way. And, you know, he does have good intentions, and he's just not good communicator.
I will say, though, I think we all want to root for him, and I think that's what we yeah. get from watching the episode. I think he does a lot of things that are not right, with the way he treats his wife, with the way he treats, you know, the people that come into his life. But I think overall, I think we literally want to root for him and kind of keep him going, even though he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing.
I
think that he does need... I mean, he
like
some
a kick
of these things.
In the butt?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So he runs into personal problems in this episode with Hendrix, with Morgan the reporter, and Wilson the editor. In all three of those scenes, who was noticeably absent? Who could have helped him with maybe people issues?
I know.
Who is it, Roya?
Virginia.
Masters is a doctor. But he wants to study. Virginia's a people person. And I'm not saying she would have smoothed over the article or anything, but she would have done a much better job than he did.
Especially woman to woman.
Yeah.
Versus
right.
man.
Okay. And then, I mean, we have Virginia's kind of absent this episode for him on the emotional support, because she's dealing with Dr. DePaul and they're fighting, mm-hmm. and Dr. DePaul's leaving on her own from the hospital. And then they're, Dr. Masters and Virginia are meeting to have sex, you know, for the study. And
right.
Virginia
for
ends up crying, which is a huge point in the episode, where Virginia is like being vulnerable and soft and sad and not her normal strong self. And, you know, Dr. Masters looks over and she says, you know, she knows me, she's my friend, like she got in, she wormed between and got to me. And he looks at her and says, I know you. And then kisses her.
There's a key point before that I want to talk about, though, because this is a crazy theory I have, but I want to hear what you guys think. At one point, Virginia's talking about how Lillian was finally let in. She broke down the walls and went around the walls that Virginia has. And Dr. Masters said to her, quote, "You didn't see it coming because she's a woman." Which is an interesting thing to say.
That is an interesting thing to say.
And it piqued my interest that, hey, maybe there's something a little bit deeper than friendship going on with Virginia and Lillian. Is it hot romance? Oh. Is it sex? Certainly not. Virginia kissed her on the lips later, didn't she?
Really? You thought that was, you took that out of there?
I took that out of there too, Bobby. I think I did.
Maybe me and Lem will be on the same page. Because what I took out of it was that he was talking about Virginia and that his feelings snuck up on her, like, about her. It was about Virginia that he was talking about.
Oh, I see that too.
But he specifically said to Virginia, you didn't see it becoming because she was a woman, implying that you didn't expect to have any sort of love connection or whatever because she was a woman, but you do.
No, but the thing is, Virginia and Masters are very similar where they both build up walls and they don't let people in. And that's what he was referring to Virginia as, her sneaking around his wall.
Yeah.
That's what I took as well.
Okay. Yeah.
I can see that too.
That may be true.
I can see, but still with the Lillian thing.
Exactly. The two are not mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia can sneak around Bill's walls. And Lillian can sneak around Virginia's.
I don't think we're talking about sexual walls.
Are we talking about sneaking under skirts?
This is not a sexual thing. I'm talking about some kind of love, some kind of relationship that's just a little bit deep. This is not Betty and Helen.
Right.
But it's something a little bit deeper than friends. There's something
else
there.
But here's the thing, though. Here's how you can tie into that comment that you just said. Because when Al was talking to his friend about Betty and Helen about their kiss that he saw in the coming out of the bathroom, it was a peck, and he's like, "Oh, well, my aunt used to do it, not as much." That's kind of the same kiss that Virginia gave to Lillian.
You thought that was just a peck?
Yes.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, how are you guys kissing?
Oh my gosh! If I kissed anybody like that, I feel like they would try to put some tongue in there. Or at least
it
grope me.
It was like a Snow White kiss.
Well,
I guess that's a little bit. Wait, that proves your point. No.
Right.
It was a friendship kiss.
Okay, I have never had a friendship kiss.
This is my thing with
Maybe
this.
Maybe we should all friendship kiss after this.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Jenna.
I want to say to that, to me, it doesn't make sense what you're saying about the whole kiss situation, because you're using that to back up what you feel about her feelings are stronger than what they should be in that direction. My thing is, in the state that she's in with her, with the way she is with Doctor, the way she is with her, it's not, there's
Lillian?
No, thank you.
Okay, sorry.
There's no, sorry, couldn't get it. There's no sexual, anything that would afford the sexual to get in because of the nature of their relationship right now. And right now, she's like a caretaker to her. You know, she has this cervical cancer. She's trying to be there for her as her friend. And she said that. I want to be there as her friend. So to me, it doesn't make sense for it to turn into something sexual in the state of their friendship as her, she is dying.
But that's the thing. It's not sexual. I'm not saying it's just a friendship. It's not a sexual thing, but there's something deeper than a friendship.
Sister.
But do you kiss your sister like that?
Kids. Maybe it's like her little kid sister type of thing.
I don't know.
No
I just think
way.
It's
you keep putting weight on this kiss, and I'm just
there
saying, like,
is.
I can't
it's a weird
see that.
Kiss. It's a weird
It was a
thing.
Long kiss. It wasn't like a good night.
No. It was a goodbye kiss. That's
right.
What it was. It was a goodbye
that
kiss.
Thank you.
That
goodbye.
Too.
And how many goodbye kisses do you have with your girlfriends?
I don't say goodbye to my girlfriends. I mean, like, goodbye,
we
like,
have
dead
to move
wise,
on.
Dead
we have
wise.
To move on, because we're...
I'm just saying.
We're running short on time. Hey, we got good news, but let's do it next week or something, so keep going.
Oh, no. We still have a few more minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have that going on, and then we have this whole situation with Libby being obsessed about Coral's situation, following him through. We kind of touched on that. And then the only other thing left on that was that when she did confront Robert, and she found out that he was her brother... It changed things for her in that moment. And then all of a sudden she was kind of okay with it. And then there was like some sexual tension between them. Okay. This was like sexual tension filled.
It was sweet.
Sorry.
That
I don't know.
Well, her blood up.
When was the last time Libby was touched by a man? Serious question.
Oh my
when
gosh.
Masters
when they
had
did
sex
the,
with
when
her.
They had sex with all those clothes on last week.
With all their clothes on. Key fact.
It's been
and
a while.
She had an orgasm, but no one heard it.
Yeah.
She faked it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was, good touching there.
Good talk.
Yeah, there was. And then, so we kind of come to the end of the episode and we see Lillian overdosing on her sleeping medication. and Virginia finding out and being able to call the cops or being able to call the emergency to come, you know, get her stomach pumped. But she doesn't. She makes a choice and she lets Lillian die, which is a huge selfless thing after their weird friendship kiss.
Yeah.
But she laid down with her and cuddled her. And I can see that. I cuddle girlfriends all the time. We, like, when we're going through breakups, sometimes we cuddle, but not kiss.
No, no, but here's to tie in with the title of Blackbird. Blackbird symbolizes freedom. So Lillian finally got her freedom. Okay. Was set free.
Yeah.
I think so. And I think it's the right move by Virginia, considering the circumstances. I don't know if I could have done the same thing. You got to be a special person to do that, but it's the right move.
Mm-hmm. And it is what she wanted, obviously.
And Lillian was not alone when she died.
Right.
And Virginia fixing everything, not taking no for an answer. Virginia was adamant. You're going to fight this. You're going to fight this. You're going to fight this. And Lillian said, no, no, no. Virginia finally took no for an answer and gave up control and said, this is not my battle. This is your battle. And if you're done, I'm cool with it.
Right.
Which is huge.
And then we have the Betty-Helen triangle kind of come to a close too, because Al discusses with Jean after Helen or after Betty says, "Hey, look, I don't ever want to be around either one of them again, especially Helen." He confronts Al and says, "Hey, look, we can't be your witnesses for your wedding. I'm so sorry." He discusses the kiss, and then Jean confronts Betty, and I think they're getting a divorce because he confronts her about loving Helen, and she didn't deny it, and I think that was the last straw for her.
You think he's gonna end it up with her?
Yeah, because he even says,
for sure, Karen, no more pretzels for her.
He even says a line like, "Care is what you care for a stray dog," or something like that, and love is who you share your bed with.
That's a great line.
Yeah.
Gene came to play tonight.
That was a great scene.
Well, I think he just came to his wits end because he had been lied to so much with her. Mm-hmm. And it was like, this was like the last straw.
I know.
When he found out.
And then we have Bill leaving Buell's, right? Him having one last talk with Dr. Hendricks. And then I'm feeling like Dr. Masters is going to have like a heart attack already because he's like left another hospital and now he's endangered Virginia. He goes right to Virginia. She's not home. She's with Lillian.
Did this remind you of anything? This exact scene of him running up to the door?
Rerun of last season.
Right, and the finale, like, minus the rain.
They're just going to do it over and over again. And so they this guy, totally out of nowhere, is at the house. Now, I thought he was going to be like a babysitter, but turns out she met this guy, Shelley, at Park Plaza the night of their fight. Like, ugh, so heartbreaking. Like, that's burn. Even though Masters is married, like, that sucks. And so then after that, it's like he can't take anything. Like, I will be so surprised if Dr. Masters sees him, if he's even in next episode, because he, like, survived.
He did say he didn't feel good.
Hey. Oh, my God. Oh, and so I think he was going to come home and project all those feelings of, like, I miss Virginia onto Libby. And I think they might have had sex because he was sitting on her bed.
They didn't show anything.
I know. But we'll see them maybe in one bed in the start of next episode. Well, they'd like to start out the episodes, obviously, with sex.
So you think it's going to be them too?
I think it's going to be him and Libby in one bed.
Go for it, Roya. What is it?
I disagree.
This tied back to the fight scene with the boxing with the white man versus the black man. And who won in that boxing ring?
No, I don't remember.
It was the black man.
Yeah.
And who won in this episode?
All the black people.
Yes! Tied in right there.
Oh!
So,
kind of loosely.
I like the way, and I'll just say this, like, I think it's interesting because the difference between last season and this season, seeing at this time that it's really tackling civil rights issues in the scope of everything that's going on, because you can't really get away from that because of this time period. So I just want to say I really appreciate that the show is doing this.
Right. And instead of predictions tonight, let's do news.
We don't have time for it. We'll do it next week. We can wrap up, Jenna.
Sure?
Yeah. It's a good one. We got to save it. We need a couple minutes for it.
Okay. All right. So we'll do predictions then real quick.
What you got, Roya?
Why am I always first? You go first this time and then I'll go second.
Lem, you go.
Okay. So I predict that Libby is going to try to get Coral to come back at some point in time. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Bobby.
I'll agree with that one. I'll also say Bill is not going to be able to go into private practice. He's not going to be able to lose his surgical privileges and whatever. I don't know where he's going to go, but either something bad's going to happen with his practice. He can't go into private practice. I don't think he wants to do that.
Okay, Roya.
I think Bill will punch Shelley in the face.
Okay, and I think that Bill will go into private practice, and I think that he will have had sex with Libby, and I think that Libby's going to sleep with Robert. All right, well, that's it for our show tonight. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to think. Please make sure to comment on YouTube and Twitter and let us know what you think and iTunes. Royal, where can they find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Hey Roy. That's H-E-Y-R-O-Y-A.
Bobby.
I'm on Twitter at Bobby DeMuro, on Instagram at Mr. Bobby DeMuro.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Poet Saint all day, every day.
And I am Jenna Couture, your host. Well, of four. And you can find me at Jenna Time Tweets. Thanks.
What was that?
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.